Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Peter. We talk a lot on this show about vision loss. This week, we'll talk about research about new eye surgical procedures and how some of these vision problems may be corrected.
We'll talk with David Hertwick, a blind senior engineer at Bausch & Lomb, and he will describe some of the new tools that he and his team have developed and how some modern eye surgeries are performed using them. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from David Hertwick, in which he's talking about being a blind employee.
Don't make it an issue. You're there to do a job. The company's not there to accommodate you. And I know that kind of may sound harsh, but you're there to do the job. If you can't do it as good as another person, well, you're going to have a hard time competing. And what I've found, you go out there and work, and I've been very fortunate to have some colleagues all over the world. I work weekly with a company in Germany and have been to Germany several times. And it's just never been an issue when I've gone over there. Okay, well, maybe Dave can't see where he's going when we go out for dinner or something like that. But in the engineering spaces, it just has never come up as an issue, has never been questioned. And I never bring it up. I mean, if somebody's curious, certainly you talk about it. But you're in a professional world and you enjoy it.
I think nothing speaks louder than success.
You're exactly right. And sounds like you both are very successful too.
We've had very good careers, yes. And I agree with Dave. I mean, the bottom line is an employer hires an employee to get a specific job done. And what's important to the employer is how well and how efficiently that job gets done. You may need some adaptive aids or some modifications to do your job, but you ought to be able to do the job that's required, and your blindness really shouldn't be an issue to the employer.
Let's start by meeting David Hertwick and learning a bit about Bausch & Lomb.
My name is David Hertwick. I am a visually impaired engineer. I work for Bausch & Lomb. I've been with Bausch & Lomb for going on 14 and a half years, and I work in the research and development section.
I think most people are aware of Bausch & Lomb as being huge in the optics industry. Can you just give a kind of a quick overview of what the major product lines are?
Sure. Well, we just were acquired by a company called Valiant last year. So we're Bausch & Lomb, division of Valiant. We do a lot of different types of eye drops, eye salves, and then we have all the different contact lines and then the contact solutions. And the division I MN is our surgical division. There's a division of the surgical that makes the intraocular lenses. And I'm in the equipment division, and we build the actual surgical equipment that an eye surgeon uses in surgery.
And Bausch & Lomb was founded and for many years had its headquarters in our hometown, Rochester, New York.
Yes.
Now, you described yourself as an engineer. Can you tell us a little bit more specifically what your role is in the company?
Sure. I graduated from Washington University here in St. Louis in 86 with a degree in mathematics. And from there, I worked in academia for 10 years. I got a master's degree in computer science. Then I joined Bausch & Lomb in 2000 as a software engineer. Mainly, I did a lot of embedded work. My software basically controls the flow of energy in and out of the eye during the surgery. So it's a lot of closed loop controls and monitoring sensors and pressures and things like that. Then for the last 4 or 5 years, I've been doing more project management. I still do the firmware, but I just added on to managing projects.
You also indicated that you were visually impaired. Can you talk a little bit about the state of your vision and how that enables you or not to do your job?
Sure. I have what's called Peters anomaly, and on top of that, I have glaucoma. So I have zero vision in my right eye, and slightly more than light perception in my left. Like I could use a CCTV if I get close enough and if the letters are like 2 inches tall.
Have you had a visual impairment since you were a child, or did this develop as you were an adult?
I was born with congenital glaucoma, so I've been legally blind my whole life. My vision has gotten a little bit worse over the last 5 or 10 years, and it's a degenerative disease, so it will continue to get worse.
So you said sometimes you use CCTVs. Do you primarily use Braille and speech? Do you do your programming?
I haven't really used Braille since college, although with my decrease in vision, I might have to move back into that. But mainly programming with using speech, JAWS, and NVDA, and different technologies like that.
Well, it sounds like you've done it very successfully there. You have a very responsible role, I take it.
Well, it's been fun, you know. I've had the privilege of being in the OR when they used equipment that I've helped design to restore a person's eyesight. So it's pretty rewarding, especially with coming from somebody that is visually impaired themselves.
Wow, that must be really exciting.
Yeah, you kind of wonder, boy, do I hope I get rid of that last bug.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is novel equipment for performing eye surgeries and how it is developed.
So you told us you work at Bausch & Lomb on various surgical and eye products. Can you give us examples of some of the products that you have worked on and that are out in the field now?
Sure. The most recent product, in fact, the product that I led the team on, both I worked on it as an individual contributor and as the project leader, was one of our devices is used for both anterior and posterior surgery. It was my project to integrate and add a laser photocoagulator to the system. It's a laser. It's a green light laser. For your technical people, it's a 532 nanometer laser. And it's used in the eye like a spot welder. It's used for reattaching detached retinas. So this is my most recent product that I helped launch. And I managed a team of 3 mechanical engineers, 2 electrical engineers, some QA people, and a lot of outsourced people that developed different things for the product. Our goal was to take this laser and put it into our system such that it looked like the system always had it. The system was originally designed not to have a laser, but our goal was to fit it in somehow.
So now, back in the day, all of the eye operations were done using scalpels. These days, a lot of them are done using just lasers. Is this device a laser plus something that would do a physical interaction with the eye, or totally laser?
Well, this laser is used as part of a surgery. So most of the eye surgeries today, such as a cataract surgery, such as a posterior eye surgery, like having to do with the retina, are done through, they call them ports, or tiny little holes in the eye, and they insert needles. And the needles have different functions. For example, with my laser, the needle has a fiber optic inside it, so the laser actually, the light actually gets emitted inside the eye. They're so small that when the doctors remove these instruments from the eye, the wounds are self-healing. It's microscopic surgery. The doctors usually doing the surgery through a microscope.
Oh, that's interesting. I thought a lot of laser surgery was done through the clear part of the cornea and the lens.
A lot of different surgeries are. There's lasers called YAG lasers, which are used after cataract surgery. The YAG lasers are used from the front of the eye, and they shoot into the eye, and they're used to basically clean up cells that can develop on the lens. And there's, we all have heard of LASIK, which is reshaping the cornea with a laser. And those are lasers that are used outside the eye. Lasers that are used inside the eye, if a person may have something like a diabetic retinopathy, which can cause a lot of bleeding in the eye. So you actually have to go inside the eye and take care of these tiny blood vessels. So there's both kinds, shooting, you know, through the cornea and using these very tiny fiber optics that actually carry the laser energy and emit it inside the eye.
I gather the reason you would use the internal laser is because you need to position the beam more accurately?
Well, that's interesting. You know, when they use a laser that fires inside the eye, they're usually doing multiple things. For example, in a person that has a damaged retina, just in front of the retina, there's a material called vitreous, and it's a very sticky substance. And it can actually, if your vitreous gets damaged, it can actually put tension on or damage your retina. So a lot of times we'll have to go in with a microscopic cutter and remove the vitreous and then go in with the laser, and they'll use tiny little instruments to lay their retina back down and tack the retina back down with the laser. So usually when they use an internal laser, they have to go in and fix something else.
So this is really interesting. As you said, there really needs to be a mechanical team to design the mechanisms itself, and then the electrical and software team to figure out how these devices actually work in terms of their software.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate to work with a number of very brilliant people. We have mechanical engineers because the cutters are basically pneumatic cutters. So we need pneumatic engineers that's basically dealing with air and air pressure. And then a device that's actually used to remove cataracts is an ultrasound device. A needle vibrates ultrasonically and disrupts the tissue, and they can remove the cataract. So it's all sorts of different people, electrical engineers, mechanical engineers. And then we have to build this somehow. So then we interface with industrial engineers to actually take our designs and put it on the factory floor so people can build it.
So one part of this process seems to be it takes a bunch of clever engineers with some ingenious ideas to develop the concepts and to actually implement this into a working device. But there must be another hurdle in terms of getting physicians to use these new devices. If they're used to their old tools, how does that interaction work?
Well, it's a gradual improvement of the technology. For example, if we just take one of the most common eye surgeries is cataract surgery. If a person lives long enough, you're going to have a cataract.
And just to clarify for our listeners who may not know, that's when the lens of your eye gets clouded.
Yes. It is actually your lens. Sometimes it'll just get hard. Sometimes it'll get cloudy. Sometimes it'll get cloudy and hard. And what a cataract surgery is, they actually go in to your eye with a needle, and the needle vibrates ultrasonically. And we have another instrument that's a handheld instrument that actually breaks the cataract up into several pieces. And then they use this needle to basically suck, and they grab a piece and they apply some ultrasonic energy, breaks up the piece and removes it. And then after that's done, they insert an artificial lens. We call that an IOL, intraocular lens. Basically, that technology started in the 80s. And then I think Bausch & Lomb's first machine to do this kind of surgery launched in 1990. And we're on our fifth generation machine now. So each machine gets a little bit better in terms of how it removes the cataract, ease of use, smaller. So the technology, a lot of the technology that we deal with, you know, came about in the late 80s or 90s. And a lot of what we do is refine it, make it easier for the doctor to use, make it safer, and so forth.
So you've made kind of incremental changes that make it easy for the doctors to move on to the next new device.
Yes. Each device that comes out either has some sort of feature that makes the process faster or it makes it technically easier.
Do you or some members of the engineering team actually interact with the doctors then in getting these devices out the door?
Very much so. In my project that just finished, even though that was a posterior eye project, we had interaction teams visiting with doctors because there's a lot of different instruments. For example, I told you the fiber optic takes the light into the eye. Well, some doctors like the needle to be straight. Some doctors like the needle to be curved. Some like to have actually a little light on the end of the handpiece. So there's a lot of ergonomics that go along with it, just because the doctor has to hold this and make tiny movements. So it has to fit in his hand good. It has to, you know, not be fatiguing. For example, part of my project was to develop a foot controller that the doctor used to fire the laser. So a lot of interaction with the surgeons You know, does this feel good on your foot? Is it easy to press? Sometimes they'll fire a laser 100 times during a surgery. Can the doctor press the button 100 times and not be tired?
They may start developing carpal tunnel after a while, I guess.
That's very true. And, you know, doctor's sitting there using his hands all day in very minute motions. It's a very big concern.
So before you actually get these devices into the operating room, what kind of testing do you do with them?
Lots and lots.
Good.
Usually when you develop a system, we typically develop it in three phases, an alpha, beta, and a production. And the alpha is basically prototypes, and you get everything working. Then you build it again, and then you go into a formal verification and validation. Once that's done, you submit your paperwork to the government, to the FDA, to get approval. Once it's approved, then you can sell it to the doctors. Just for example, the project I just finished, our FDA submittal was approximately 3,500 pages.
That's a good amount of reading for anyone.
Yeah.
Yes.
So at what point in this process do you actually try the device on a real eye?
Well, throughout the development, since these are second, third, and fourth generation products, a lot of the development is done on cadaver eyes, and we typically use also pig's eyes for a good model. You know, we do all the verification work, which is the technical testing, make sure everything meets its requirements. Then we have an expert that comes in and what we call validates it, means it'll meet the surgeon's need and his expectation. And typically, that's done with using pig's eyes and so forth. Now, if we come up with a product that's a totally new technology, then we have to do things like safety and efficacy studies, live animal studies. But on these products that are incremental improvements, verification and validation, you typically don't use live animals, and the product gets released to market and then it gets used on people. But there's lots and lots of work and testing and safety testing and risk analysis and all sorts of levels that you have to go through before it can be used on a person.
I know that sounds like an awful lot of work, and it might not sound too appealing to some people, but as a potential patient, you know, I can speak for everybody that we're really glad that you do all that testing.
Let me tell you this. One of the more interesting things, about 4 or 5 years ago, my wife had cataract surgery, and they used our equipment on her. So it was a little bit different than you have to see them using something you designed on a member of your relatives. And I was 100% confident that everything was going to go fine when she went into the surgery.
How long does it take to perform a cataract operation?
One of the interesting things about cataract surgery that a lot of people that haven't had it done don't realize, it's very, very quick. The whole procedure takes 5 to 6 minutes. They typically wheel the patient in 5 or 6 minutes. They wheel the patient out, wheel somebody else in. Sometimes a high volume surgical center can do 40 to 60 patients a day.
Wow.
Wow. It's almost like a production line.
Well, it is. And it is one of the most miraculous surgeries, because you have somebody with called a mature cataract, that they can't see hardly anything. They go in for the procedure, and then in about an hour after the procedure, their vision is back. It's one of the more, they almost would call miracle surgeries.
Was there any reluctance to hiring a visually impaired person when you applied for these positions?
Well, if I go back to when I got out of college, there was a lot of reluctance. This was back in the late 80s. I go in for interviews, and my visual impairment is very obvious. I have white clouded corneas, and a lot of the times, you know, the interview would end before it began, and it took 2 years of hard looking for me to find my first job. And then once there, you have to try to excel and then let your record speak for yourself. My first real job for the first 10 years was working in a research lab, doing biological research, figuring out how to collect the data, figuring out how to design this to do the study. And then when I went into the private sector, basically letting my record speak for itself, and vision never was even questioned. When I had that interview with Bausch & Lomb, you know, I showed them my resume of 12 or so years in the industry, and I never specifically brought it up. And it was just, well, this guy has done the work before. We'll hire him and let him do the work for us. That's kind of how I've enjoyed my career, is never making an issue of it and letting your performance speak for itself.
So it sounds like you did run into some of the hurdles initially that people talk about, but just through persistence and getting a foot in the door, by the time you did that, you were able to demonstrate that you had a track record of being successful, and that sort of paved the way for the rest of your successes.
Yes, you're exactly right. Getting your foot in the door that first time is probably the hardest thing anybody will do in your life. That's not just for visually impaired people. Kids coming out of college, your first job is going to be the hardest one to get in your life. So it may be harder with visually impaired people. It may not be. But that first job, getting your foot in the door, is absolutely one of the hardest things any person will do in their life, sighted or not sighted. And you just have to keep knocking on doors till something breaks.
So you worked your way through getting an education that was really appropriate for the kind of job that you wanted to pursue, and getting your foot in the door, getting some successes, and starting out as a beginning engineer. And you finally worked your way up the ladder to now where you're a project manager. Were there any particular hurdles that you had to overcome to become a project manager and get such a responsible position?
One of the things I did since I first joined Bausch & Lomb was I worked on another laser project, so I had some experience, and I had been an individual contributor, which that just means you're an engineer and you report to people, but no one reports to you, for a long time. And I knew this laser project was coming up, and I went to our department head and I said, "Tom, I'd very much like to lead this laser project. Remember we did this one before, and you know, if you're looking to have a project manager come in or what have you, I'd like to do it." And his response was, "Well, Dave, be careful what you wish for." And about a month later, they assigned the project to me, as well as carrying on all my individual contributor roles.
So you can work twice as hard.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you have to.
What special skills did you need for that job?
One thing I learned right off the bat was engineering is the easy part. Dealing with people and people's problems, that's a lot tougher.
Well, it's a very different skill set. And Pete and I are retired research physicists from Xerox, and we were forever seeing brilliant research scientists get promoted into management and just not having a clue how to do the people part.
Yes, it is 100% different skill set. And I think I took to it and I really enjoyed it and had my hand in the technical stuff enough to keep my interest. You know, one of the tools that I had to learn, and fortunately it turned out to be very accessible, was Microsoft Project. And the project plan I developed, you know, by the time it's done with all the different tasks and all the different resources and so forth, was probably 3,000 to 4,000 lines long of different tasks and due dates, and this task is linked to that. So that was one of my big concerns, managing such a product, how accessible some of the project management tools are. And fortunately, the Microsoft Project is very Excel-like and very accessible.
What training did you get to help the transition to a leadership position?
I did take a project management class at Washington University. And that did help. One of the other things we did as an engineering team a number of years ago was do a very intensive 4-week class on something called Design for Six Sigma. This was how to engineer products. And so, you know, 4-week and really intensive class, being on good projects, having good personal relationships with a lot of people, and trying to develop personal skills as far as on top of engineering skills.
So where did you get hold of training materials in an accessible format?
They weren't. I've always been an extremely good listener. you know, as far as lectures and picking up stuff that way. My wife was an extremely large help doing some reading. OCR, you know, scanning a lot of stuff. It was a big help. And then right now I'm using Amazon eBooks. It's been a tremendous help. I wish they had those when I was in college.
Now for this week's final item, how to get more information about Bausch & Lomb's products and how to contact David. If somebody wanted to learn more about what kind of instruments Bausch & Lomb is creating for ophthalmological surgery, where could they possibly get that information?
Well, they can start by going to the Bausch & Lomb main website. That's just BAUSCH.com, and they can read about, you know, all sorts of the drugs we have and promotional materials and so forth. And, you know, if anybody out there with a visual impairment is interested in being an engineer and learning more about this, I would be more than happy to talk with them. I'd be happy to provide contact information.
Oh, great. What would that be?
My personal email address is David.Hertwick, HERTWECK, at sbcglobal.net.
So I believe you sent us a note saying that after listening to the show we did about AFB Career Connect, that you signed up as a mentor through that program as well.
I did. I heard that I was accepted, and I hope that I can help somebody.
And I've also personally been a mentor with the AFB Career Connect program for a very long time. As usual, we'll have links to all of the contact information that was mentioned in the show, along with information about the show we did on AFB Career Connect, if you're interested in finding out more about that. And just go to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net, and click on the show notes link associated with this show.
That's it for show number 1504. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about working from home. This is a topic that we've gotten a lot of requests from listeners to cover. And although we've gotten input from individuals who have experience working from home, we will be speaking with Ron Milliman, who not only also has experience working from home, but has given a lot of thought to the topic and has given many presentations on the topic. And he will be talking about the pros and cons of doing so, especially for a visually impaired person. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.